Welcome to Five Star Radio. Consider this your warning. Hey there, cats and kittens. Mike Coughlin here at halfguarded.com with Five Star Radio. Or should I say, I am Five Star Radio because, as you can tell from the topic, we're talking a little bit of TV, actually. I wrote an article, and it's up. And this will be spoiler. I'm going to be talking about the TV show Mr. Robot, which has gotten a lot of critical acclaim from USA Network. This will be very, very, very spoiler-filled. Super spoiler-filled. It's the kind of spoilers that will ruin the season for you if you haven't seen it. I'm also in the midst of watching, and maybe I'll start out with The Nick, which was actually on Cinemax starring Clive Owen. HBO's had it on HBO Go for free, so I've been actually just watching that because I'm bored. It's Labor Day weekend. My fucking website's still down. Not a ton of spoilers in that one. It's not really a spoiler type of show. It's like kind of like just watching Dr. House 100 years before House was set. I mean, it's just, you know, a drug addict, brilliant surgeon dude, and that's it. It's good. Every episode is directed by Steven Soderbergh, so this is his newest and latest. I'm bored. I want to keep myself busy doing things. But, you know, Clive Owen being on it, he's outstanding. The other actors and such, it's a brutal look at the world. I don't think that they're overstating anything that's going on. I mean, from essentially the abhorrent racism that still existed, yet the duality of it in that one of the other, you know, this other doctor that kind of comes in is, if you will, a plot driver, is this brilliant surgeon who traveled the world. He's black, and he went to Harvard and all this stuff. And you compare that, you know, he's still, obviously, he deals with racism in the hospital. Nobody wants the Negro to touch him and things like that. And so, you can contrast that with the out-and-out abuse suffered in the streets by black people. You know, at one point, a black guy defends his woman. He gets in a fight. A white guy gets stabbed, dies. And as a result, and it's all the Irish, they're all just running around just beating the shit out of every black person they could find. And every black person is expected to be, you know, put in their place. And even this brilliant surgeon who traveled throughout Europe, and they talk about Europe in terms of being, you know, more progressive, and he didn't face this kind of discrimination, which I would imagine back then is probably true. I think Europe has gotten progressively probably more racist over time, almost in an inverse proportion to America, which I think is in pure speculation. I'm just making shit up here. Just the result of a greater influx of minorities into Europe. Right now they're having the Syrian refugee crisis, and you're seeing Europeans struggle with this. From a purely humanitarian perspective, these people are dying and they need help. Let them in. But it's something I actually noticed this several years ago in the banlieue, the suburbs of Paris. Whereas in America, for the most part, suburbs are where the rich people go to live. In Paris, it's the opposite. The suburbs are where the poor and the immigrants live, and the city itself is where all the richy types live. And so the banlieue are filled with a lot of Muslims, because France has connections, obviously, with former colonies in Algeria and whatnot, all throughout Africa, which are now primarily Islamic. And a lot of these countries still had just essentially almost an unfettered right to migrate to France. No questions asked. And so the French are struggling with something. And it's appropriate that I'm recording this on Labor Day. And I think this is a reality. It's a question of racism. It's also a question not just of ethnicity and nationalism, but of culture. Because France had this influx of people that weren't French. And that's the thing. It's very odd. And I think it's one of the things that Americans in particular, I think we have trouble understanding this. And I also think it's why when Americans are very proud and patriotic, a lot of Europe looks at that and thinks that, because the modern European experience has been so extreme in the form of essentially fascism and totalitarianism throughout Germany and Italy, and a little bit Russia also. But the thing is, like, if you're French, we know, if you say somebody's from France, you imagine a Frenchman. Now, yes, he's white, but you know the language, you understand there's a certain culture to France that's different than the German culture. They're both white as shit. It's not like anybody in France is any more or less pigment-wise white than Germans. But the German culture stereotypically more efficient, they're sterner, they're more disciplined, less fun-loving and harder working and things like that. Whereas the French are, you know, the lovers and the artists and things like that. They enjoy their food and their wine. And then you have the Italians and the Spanish who are closer to the French. And then you have the English who are a culture unto themselves. And so on. So, I don't really understand Scandinavia, to be honest. I know that there is that super duper, just we're really, really nice. In America, we call it Minnesota nice. But, I always think it's funny as shit. I think there should be like a moratorium on pointing towards Norway or Sweden as proof that anything in the world works. Because, like, Norway is like 5 million people or some shit. It's smaller than Chicago. You can make shit work on a small level. America's 300 million, Europe is 600 million. Like, you gotta figure out something that works on a large scale when you have diverse cultures. And so France dealt with this influx before this refugee crisis. And the French take their culture very seriously. And so suddenly, in the banlieue, there were essentially Muslims living their lifestyle, their culture, what they grew up with. They brought their traditions with them. Americans are kind of used to this. We are the true melting pot. And we're very good at integrating things. And sometimes, it's done by racist means often. But in time, we have little Italy and Chinatown and Germantown. And I mean, Chicago is very different, I think, than some other places in the United States. We're always known as like a city of villages. Kind of like, there's this area, the Polish are here, the Irish are there. And, throughout America's history, certain ethnic groups had certain jobs. And it wasn't always in a bad way. I mean, yes, blacks are always, always second class. And the Irish at times were treated and were second class. But, the Jewish people ran the banking sector. And the Irish basically ran the police. And so on and so forth. So when somebody immigrated here, they had their place, their culture still existed. And it helped that it was all predominantly European. And so there was some commonality. And at least physically, you couldn't see right away the difference. And I think that that immediate physical difference is apparent to people, does register. But the French were all of a sudden had people that didn't speak French. They didn't act French, if you will. And on the one hand, like, if you say that in America, you go, somebody doesn't speak American or doesn't act American, you go, my gosh, that's racist. But if I was Michael Coughlin, shows up in France and acts just the way I do right now, you'd be like, well, you're not integrating yourself into the French culture. Because we know that there's something about France that makes it French. And the French, more than anybody, are super protective of their culture. I always thought it was funny, but I think it still exists, but for a while there, they were very, very determined and had, and what they call the ministry, they had a segment of government devoted to the language, to protecting the French language. I think it may have also been the culture, But the language, like, they would come up with French words for anything found in America. Or I should say in English. So when the word computer came out, there's no French for computer. It's not a Latin derivative. It's an English derivative. It's Germanic, I would imagine, if anything, in origin. And so I remember we had to learn the word computer is l'ordinateur. This is despite the fact that computers didn't exist in any way, shape, or form as part of the general vocabulary, and probably until this 50s at the earliest, more likely 60s, 70s, and 80s. There is no reason for the French to come up with l'ordinateur. It doesn't sound anything like computer. They could have just used la computer. They could have just, you know, Frenched it up a little bit. The same way that in America and probably England, we tend to anglicize foreign words to make them, we just look at the word, just pronounce it with our own accent. Okay, that's the word. Taco, I guess. Or burrito. Like, we didn't look at the word burrito and go, no, we need to come up with the American version of that. You can't be using Spanish. Like, burrito, from what I understand, is a Spanish term, or taco, burrito. I'm just using the easiest examples. These things don't have English phrases. I mean, they're just fucking sandwiches. We could have called them, and we kind of create things that are the same thing, just with little different ingredients, call them wraps or whatever, but whatever, we're good about that. And now, with this influx of refugees, people are worried, oh, what's it going to do to our culture? And again, as Americans, we're used to this. We resist it, don't get me wrong, we're hardly better. But I think that, again, looking, tying this all back to the Nick, while I think that minorities, non-whites, were probably treated with some degree, they were treated a little bit better in Europe at one time, it's because they just weren't a threat. You know, you'd see one or two, maybe. They weren't ever present. Whereas in America, you know, even now, 10% of the United States of America is black. 30-some percent or something like that, or 25% is non-white Hispanic or some shit like that. If you have your, what you perceive as your culture, that can be a perceived threat. Now, I don't think that it's fair to call it a threat. I think it's very, very telling that it's always amusing when people are like, oh, you've appropriated the black music, or you've taken their culture. I'm like, well, isn't that a good thing? Like, not that we should, like, not let black people play music or whatever, but that's what America does. The black community, American blacks, if you will, you know, basically responsible for blues and jazz and the development of these different kind of purely American styles of art and music. And it's good that it's just been appropriated rap. I mean, it's a good thing that Eminem's a rap star. Just as it's a good thing that Lenny Kravitz could play rock and roll. Or Jimmy Page. What's his face? The greatest guitarist of all time. He's black, right? You know what I mean? It's good, I think, when things stop becoming, oh, that's black music, and just, that's music. Now, I understand that there's a hesitancy sometimes probably from the black communities that they're losing their identity, which is, especially for American blacks, I think it's very different. They don't have a history. They don't have something they can look back at. I think that they're constantly trying to, in a good way, create or invent their past. Because their past is basically where they're in Africa and somebody grabbed them, ripped them from their homes, brought them to America, and made them be slaves for a long time. And so they can't even necessarily, they don't always know, am I Kenyan, am I Ethiopian, or whatever it may be. And that's to say, not the fact that I don't know enough about the African continental politics to know how much there's a real difference. Like, do they really see themselves as different countries, or are they artificial creations in the same way that essentially the British created Iran and Iraq in the 20s? Because they're like, well, we got to just draw a line in the sand. That's a very American thing, very Western thing to do. This is ours. Okay, this is yours. And so, and now you see the problems that emerge with that in the Middle East far more than you do anywhere else. And again, it would go away in time. Time heals all wounds or solidifies all borders, I guess you could say. But you look at like Iraq, and Iraq had Sunni Muslims, Shiite Muslims. You had the Kurds in the north. These were all very, very separate groups. They didn't have a singular identity. Are you laying down on the grass, you ass? And then, you know, there's the Coptic Christians and so on and so forth. And they were all used to just kind of being their own. And then they were forced to live with one another. And again, it'll work in time. But in the immediacy, you know, there is a struggle there. I'm never going to get to the Mr. Robot shit, so don't worry about that. And I, again, my just looking at it generally, I see the UKIP party in the United Kingdom and preserve the United Kingdom and all this stuff, and their opponents are like, fuck you, these are people, the poor bastard from Syria or Poland or whatever who just wants to survive and make a living ain't taking away your job. And they're completely right. Oddly enough, they express the very historical American attitude of, you know, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses and shit like that. But there's something, it's not like the other side's fears are all illegitimate. You do have your history and your culture. And just as I think that it's fair to say that every refugee who comes over would like to maintain some of their traditions and hold on to what makes their lifestyle special, so too do those already living in, be it England or France or Spain or Germany, want to maintain their traditions. And they don't want to wake up one day and look around and go, wait a second, why is it that nobody speaks my language? Or why is it that this name that I've never heard before is suddenly very popular? Things have changed, and change is always frightening. Now, change can be good, but because I think that Europe has never been a continent of change, unlike America, which is from the beginning has always been, you know, America takes pride in being the home of immigrants. And so even when we say we want to keep Mexicans out or seal off the borders or something like that, you also hear within people that say things like that, and I think very honestly and with great earnestness, well, we still want to let immigrants in. We still want more immigrants. Because we are very proud of the fact that basically we took all the cast-offs from the whole world. They all came here and we became a great country. And it's probably, and I, to almost kind of wrap it up, this weird-ass semi-racist, semi-not-racist, very, very superficial socio-political look at the world that was spurred on by me talking about a TV show from Cinemax. Because I kind of wanted to write a column about this. It's always better to write things down and clarify things. You can go, wait, I didn't mean it like that. America, unlike every other country in Europe, and probably like unlike most countries in the world, was never defined by borders. It was a country started on ideas. Yes, we have borders, because a country by definition cannot be a country without borders. But our country begins and is formed with written documents. The Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation didn't take, but then the Constitution of the United States of America. That is America. We are not a culture. Our culture is our ideas. We've written them down. We said, this is what we stand for. This is who we are. We treasure this freedom and that freedom and that freedom and that freedom. and so on and so forth. Whereas Europe, many European countries, they're not that way. They have an ethnic and cultural basis to everything. And I think, you know, neither one is better or worse than the other. You look at the Russians. The Russians can go from being ruled by essentially a monarchy to becoming pure communist to breaking that, becoming some form of pseudo-capitalism, and now they're into some sort of semi-oligarchical state, almost moving back towards a communist or at least monarchical state of being. And yet they all are still Russian, and they've never stopped being Russian, and they will see themselves as Russian. And I see that in Britain. It doesn't matter if it's Margaret Thatcher, Tony Blair, Brown, Cameron, whomever, that is the head of the government, they're all still English. And they don't see their national identity of being English as threatened by who's in power. They may not like, you may not like the other guy's policies. You may think there's a better way to govern your country. But you never hear about them as thinking, well, this is just undermining England as a whole. Again, it's starting to change. You're starting to see more of, you know, people worrying, like I say, the UKIP parties are some of the, they're generally classified, probably fairly so, as far-right parties popping up throughout Europe, trying to preserve history and culture and whatnot. And, again, you know, like even in France, you know, it doesn't matter if it's François Mitterrand, Nicolas Sarkozy, whomever is in charge, oh, you're all French still. Whereas in America, depending upon who's in control of, we don't really have a government in the same way, which actually speaks volumes about what it is. Our government is our country. Our country is not separate from the government. Our government is simply a representation of our country, of our people. We truly look at them as representing us. And so if we elect somebody who's far right or far left, if you're right wing and all of a sudden a very far left guy comes in, you go, my gosh, they're changing the very fabric of what makes this country. We are no longer American. We're no longer America. And they're in their mind, they're right. Same way as if you're far left and a far right wing guy comes into power, you go, this is not America. And they're both right because some parts of each policy that's implemented are not traditionally American. Single-payer health care and greater state control, these are not historically American concepts. And yet, refusal to help the poor, anti-immigration, also not historically American concepts. And so I think in America, our government is... It's weird because our government, we see it as far more of, I think, an extension of the country itself. We're not electing somebody to enact a policy. We elect people because they represent, not just represent us, but they represent a greater idea. And I think it's a struggle that I'm seeing within Europe, which Europe is handling, I think, well enough, because the fact is that people may complain, but the Syrian refugees are finding refuge. They're being taken in. They're being cared for. Oh, there may be people shouting and angry about it. But at the end of the day, that wouldn't be happening unless, if not a majority, very, very close to a majority of people were okay with it. You're not going to have 10% of the people think, yep, we need to help all these, and have 90% be opposed to it and it go through. No government would ever enact policy that much against the immediate will of the people, particularly something like taking in refugees, where there's no attempt to change the long-term fabric. You might see a government say, fuck it, we're going to pass this law, we're going to change the way things are done. We'll be super unpopular now, but in the long run, it'll create more voters for us or something like that. You know, Syrian refugees are fucking Syrian refugees. It's a purely humanitarian thing. And like I said, with France, they're struggling because I don't blame them. They want to be French. They are French. They've been French for so long, and suddenly there's an influx of people who are simply not French. And these may be very good people. They are. They're good people. They're honest people. Oh, are they more likely to create crime? Yes. Why? Because they're in the poorer areas. Poorer areas have more crime. Why? Because they're poor. They're more desperate. They have less opportunities. They're doing what they can. Not all, they don't have the resources that richer areas have. It's not as safe. The infrastructure isn't as good, and so on. And so you have that weird duality emerging in certain countries. Again, France to me is the easiest one because everybody can agree, oh, that's where a Frenchman is. And then if somebody's covered head to toe in a burqa, and the French try to outlaw burqa or headscarves, people are like, my gosh, this goes against the French ideals. But in the mind of the French, it's like, no, we are protecting the liberty of the women. And I think they come at it, everybody's coming at it from a good place. People aren't acting in bad faith. And that's what makes it so challenging. This isn't just, Nazis. That's why Hollywood will always use Nazis as bad guys. They're the perfect villain because they're just bad. What do they want to do? Take over, control every aspect of everybody's life, and they were racist who wanted to murder everybody. They wanted to murder Jews, they wanted to murder the undesirables, and so on and so forth. And they started wars, and they did horrors on a scale that have never been seen before or since. But, so we had our black and white moment. I think we were comfortable with that, but now we're back to shades of gray. And this is all because of the movie The Nick. I never got around to Mr. Robot. We'll have to save that for the next time. I'm getting a lot of content done because the website's still down. But when it's back, baby. Yeah. So anyways, thanks for listening to my completely uninformed, probably altogether wrong. In some people's eyes, I imagine racist as all hell. Discussion about European politics and the nature of 20th and 21st century treatment of African Americans. Or as one person once said in CNN, the African American French. You can just tell halfway through, she's like, oh, huh, my tentatively politically correct doesn't make any sense. So until next time, I'm Mike Coughlin. Love each other.
I was a 5-star man before the internet, and I'm damn sure a 5-star man now, okay? I just gotta drop the dead weight so I can shine.